And we're back! Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. And much like our relationship, we got to review today a relationship on screen where one person does all the work and the other person takes credit for it.
I feel more adult after this episode, or after preparing it. We're reviewing a mature, committed relationship.
Talking about Nobel laureates, not people from Will and Grace and NBC's
The World
Must See Thursdays.
Of literature.
I don't know anything about that, but this is another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host, also Mike.
Also Mike here.
And today we're reviewing The Wife, the Glenn Close and it is a Glenn Close vehicle. I mean, this movie is just, read any review you want online, and you're going to see that this is all Glenn Close all the time.
Now, she's great in this.
Yes.
Let me say that. But she also reinvented the Joey Tribbiani smell the fart acting. She reinvented it for this movie. She did Oops, I Pooped My Pants acting. Every time we had a close-up of her listening to somebody else give a speech, it was Oop, my poop my pants.
I really don't want to make that that connection in my brain because I was so blown away by this.
You're right. I was too initially, and then I rewatched all the clips to prepare for today, and she pooped her pants.
Okay.
At least in her mind.
Then I guess that's all we have to say.
Great method actors will channel. They'll channel anything they need to channel.
I don't think that's what she was going through her head in these scenes.
Maybe it's because I just watched American Vandal season 2 that this popped up, and after just saying we matured for this episode.
Yeah, right. Taking a hard nosedive there.
Yeah, wallow back down to my 13-year-old self.
Good
here,
start. But yeah, we're doing The Wife today with the Glenn Close and Jonathan Pryce movie. It was one of the first ones from, what was the director's name?
Since you Bjorn just mastered it.
Bjorn Runge's first American feature. And we're going to get started with cast and crew. The typical Oscars print profile formula. We're going to start a non-spoiler section, give you the spoiler dance warning, and then we're going to go into spoilers. In the second half of this episode, we will give you a notification as to when that is.
It's like Mike's, two reviews for the price of one.
That's right. And Mike's going to start with cast and crew on the non-spoiler side.
Yes, directed by Swedish filmmaker Bjorn Runge of Happy End, Mouth to Mouth, and Daybreak. Jane Anderson wrote the screenplay. She's won 3 Emmys, 2 for Olive Kitteridge with Frances McDormand in 2015.
Never watched it. I feel like I should.
And it's intense. A lot of Frances McDormand facial expressions that were pretty top-notch, right. I must say. And Jane Anderson got 4 more Emmy noms. And she won her first of those in 1993 for The Positively True Adventures of the Alleged Texas Cheerleader Murdering Mom. How about that movie?
That sounds like a Lifetime title.
I think it's a TV movie.
That's got to be a Lifetime title.
Perhaps. Anderson has also written episodes of Mad Men, The Wonder Years, The Facts of Life, and the Fonda Cage Lotto-winning rom-com, It Could Happen to You. I don't know which one of the Fondas that is, but it's one of the Fondas.
Fonda.
I always get the Fondas wrong, as we've seen in a previous episode.
Yeah, you mix up Jane and Henry a lot.
Screenwriter Jane Anderson, a lot about her here. She adapted the novel by Meg Wolitzer, also written novels The Interesting, Surrender Dorothy, and This Is My Life.
Yeah, and adapted. I was so sure that this was like a biographical look or a biographical take or a fictionalized version of events, but I couldn't find anything to substantiate that it was.
Well, it's a good omen for the your feelings on the movie.
Yeah.
It felt so real.
It did. It really did. And I was looking for that.
The poop my pants acting felt so real.
You gotta find a different term for that.
Glenn Close plays Joan Castleman, the wife of Jonathan Pryce's Joe, who in the premise of this film has been nominated for a Nobel Prize in Literature.
I won the Nobel. I won the Nobel.
Jumping on the bed, yes. We gave Glenn Close the full biofilmography treatment all the way back in episode 3 entitled Glenn Close and a Rabbit when we reviewed Fatal Attraction as part of our 87-88 Best Actress retrospective there.
Still not over how Dill Pickles killed the Nickelodeon Network, but I'll let it go for this episode.
Wow, you remembered the meta joke.
It's not a meta joke, Michael. It is a dead serious fact that I have discovered.
Okay.
The introduction of the Dill Pickles character.
It scares me.
Ended the golden era of Nickelodeon.
Just as much now. I'm as petrified as much now as I was a year ago when we recorded that.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Glenn Close is
Go back and listen to our episode. At least the opening of it so you have any idea of what the hell that meant.
And get your Glenn Close bio.
Yeah, she really is awesome. I mean, that's kind of one of the things you hit on when you read all these reviews that came out about this movie, about how she's not underappreciated, but underexposed or under-rewarded, certainly. And she really, you don't think of her as being one of the the greatest actresses of our times, but she really is.
And yet nothing but gracious, nothing but grounded and down to earth. I mean, her interviews with Peter Travers. I mean, maybe she's playing a down to earth person.
Be, yeah. Who knows?
She's a total diva lunatic, but I think she's down to earth. At least
she does come
me.
Off that way, yes.
She's convinced Peter Travers as well. To give you all of her career highlights would be impossible. I'm just going to focus on her awards life, which is substantial.
Sure.
All right. Close has been nominated for 6 Oscars, one for Albert Nobbs in 2012, 89's Dangerous Liaisons with Jeremy Irons, 88's Fatal Attraction, like we said, and we reviewed in episode 3, 85's The Natural, 84's The Big Chill, and 83's The World According to Garp. The 80s were big.
Yeah, the 80s were her big, and she, you know, did you see Albert Nobbs? I don't think
yes,
I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a great movie. Her performance is ridiculously good.
Okay.
And her daughter was in that one, too. Glenn has been nominated for 12 Golden Globes, winning 2. One for her work in the hit TV series Damages. You're a fan of that
one? Yeah, that was an underrated show.
The Shield, the excellent TV movie adaptation of The Lion in Winter.
Let me tell you.
Which I loved.
I think I said this, too, in the Fatal Attraction episode, but her season of The Shield... The Shield is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes,
her season of The Shield, one of the single best seasons of television I've ever seen.
I'm with you on both of those counts. Again, Lion and Winter TV version, Glenn Close version, great. She was nominated for her role as Cruella De Vil in the live-action 101 Dalmatians.
That's actually how my mother recognizes her, as the human that did Cruella De Vil and brought her to life.
And she often mentions, like, people are, like, a little intimidated by her in person because she played Cruella De Vil.
Let's get this out there. Glenn Close is why the term resting bitch face exists, right?
Okay.
Because she is a stone cold looker.
Stone cold.
Yeah, I mean, she looks like dead-eyed and angry and furious. In Stone Cold Steve Austin, yes, thank you. I'm surprised you made the joke and not me, but I just like to think that's me rubbing off on you. But yes, I mean, she has her face, and you know, you called it when she's acting with her, how she's like smelling a fart and all that, but her face when she is just pantomiming seriousness is intimidating. It's like aggressively intimidating.
She would have made the greatest grammar school principal of
all
time.
Oh yeah, totally. That's
Meryl
a great
Streep
point.
Endowed
That's a great point.
Level greatness. She missed her calling.
Absolutely.
She's totally ruined her life. But let's keep going about her.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
More Golden Globe nominations here. Serving in Silence, the Marguerite Kammermeier story. 91, Sarah Plain and Tall. 86 is Maxie. In 85, Something About Amelia. Again, all projects nominated for Globes there.
You know, we talk about Meryl Streep having one of the greatest legacies an actress can ever have with all her Oscar nominations, but listen to these. She's won 2 Golden Globes, hasn't won an Oscar, but you're nominated for a reason. That means you're one of the best 5 in that category of a year.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Glenn Close has been nominated for 13 Emmys, winning 2 for Damages and 1 for that film, Serving in Silence, that I mentioned. She was also nominated for a guest spot on Will and Grace in 2002. 97.
Can't get away from that show.
In the Gloaming. It's a good thing we're awake
now. Gloaming?
Caffeinated. Yeah, because that's a title I would have screwed up 100 times out of 100.
Never heard of it either.
Right. 93, Skylark. Again, more titles. It's almost like every year she was nominated for something big, if we put all those numbers together. Glenn Close won a SAG Award for The Lion in Winter, that TV movie, and 3 Tony Awards out of 4 nominations over the course of her career. So, Mike, that's just her awards highlights, and that took a long while. So, again, go back to episode 3.
She's an actual cinematic treasure. I mean, she's an American. She's one of the greatest thespians we have, and we should really just salivate and appreciate anytime she gives us an awards-worthy performance like this one is in The Wife.
The MMO audio quality back in episode 3 wasn't great. It feels like we fall on our face at times. That's just us bumping the microphones.
It was literally 2
That's
guys.
Me punching Mike, yeah.
It was that, because my thick skull, I didn't feel it. Yeah, it was 2 guys sitting on either side of a table, literally yelling into one microphone between them, as opposed to the setup we have now.
Oh, those days. Yeah. Okay, Jonathan Pryce plays Joe Castleman. He's recently played the High Sparrow in Game of Thrones.
Hey, I have this indie film. Can you get 2 leads that are like the greatest actors in the history of time for it?
Yes, an illustrious career. He'll be Don Quixote in The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, the long gestating Terry Gilliam film coming soon to Netflix.
Yeah, that one wrapped up production pretty swiftly now.
That was a great documentary. Go back to it.
If you aren't familiar with that Don Quixote movie from Terry Gilliam has been literally actually in production, it's quote unquote, died, yeah, since the 80s. And it's died. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Multiple deaths, been revived.
Johnny Depp involved for a long
time. Everybody in Hollywood at one point or another was somewhat attached to that project.
Yes, Jonathan Pryce is going to be Pope Francis in The Pope coming out in 2019.
Maybe we just let him be Pope, actually. He's talented.
Look, he was a high sparrow in Game of Thrones, Mike. That would out well.
This is your territory.
That would not work out well. Pryce is also known from Brazil and Glengarry Glen Ross. Pryce has been nominated for a Golden Globe in 94 for Barbarians at the Gate, 2 Emmys for that film, and another Emmy nomination for 2010's Cranford. He's also been nominated for a BAFTA in 1996 as Carrington. Again, long, illustrious career. Does a great career, or career.
Ends with an L, I think.
And he's great in this movie, too, I thought. Very underrated.
This movie, I think, has, what do we want to say, 4.5 performances, because the adult daughter is only in it really for a scene.
True.
So I say four main performances, and I think each one extremely, you can argue with one, but I think as far as the three, Price, Close, mm-hmm, and Christian Slater, very well casted, very well presented.
It's electric. Yeah. It's electric. Boogie, woogie, woogie. Anyway, Christian Slater from Mr. Robot and True Romance plays the wannabe biographer of Joe Castleman.
That got me. That was good.
He won a Globe, Christian Slater, for Mr. Robot, amongst 3 other nominations.
Coming to a close. Is that a show of yours? Do you watch that?
I watched the first 2 seasons. I loved them. It's a little bit of a heavy watch.
Very
it's like
heavy,
the
yeah.
Americans.
Very, very, very heavy.
But I enjoy it, and I have to get back to it. It's one of those series that I definitely want to watch.
I did season 1, and I was like, I need to know that Sunshine still exists.
Yeah, very heavy, but very good.
Yes.
Annie Stark, daughter of Glenn Close, plays a young Joan Castleman in The Wife here.
Shows how out of my wits I am. I actually said to Mike, hey, wasn't it crazy how they found an actress that looked just like a young Glenn Close?
The casting director should be just up for everything. There should be a casting director Oscar. This is why.
As you stared at me like Glenn Close did during the Nobel speech scene in this movie.
Annie Stark has been in Albert Nobbs with Mommy there, and We Don't Belong Here in 2017, most notably for her. And this was something that Glenn Close, throughout the casting process, was like trying not to throw her daughter's name in there too often. And then she finally got sick of them not being able to cast the part. And she's just like, hey, my daughter's an actress. She's great. She looks exactly like me.
We're going to get into it. There's parts in this movie where there are flashbacks to younger versions of Jonathan Pryce and Glenn Close. And like you said, Glenn Close's real life daughter plays the younger version of Glenn Close. You could see, I don't know why that wouldn't be their first thought, because she is mom to a T. Not even right. But looks, but mannerisms, delivery, speech. It's unbelievable.
It works so well. I agree. Max Iron, son of Jeremy, plays Joan and Joe's son, David Castleman, in The Wife. Again, Dangerous Liaisons connection there. He's known from The Host, Dorian Gray, Red Riding Hood, and Woman in Gold.
I was wondering
a lot of tween
Jeremy
movies.
Iron's son. Yeah, that's cool.
It is. Harry Lloyd from Game of Thrones season 1 fame plays a young
that name. You can't be in Hollywood as an actor named Harry Lloyd in the time when all of us grew up watching Dumb and Dumber.
That's true. Our generation has a bias either for or against him.
Right. You got to, Harry Smith, Peter Lloyd, you got to pick one.
Lloyd? No, wait, that's Entourage. I'm getting my metaphors mixed.
You had an extra pair of gloves this whole time?
Wow. We could just do this all day. Just keep quoting obliquely past each other. Anyway, Harry Lloyd plays a young Joe Castleman in The Wife here. He's also been in The Theory of Everything, The Iron Lady, Jane Eyre, and Anthropod. He's been in some good stuff. He's chosen some good projects over the years. You didn't love him in this. We'll get into
that. Wasn't crazy about him. We'll get into it.
The Wife also stars Elizabeth McGovern, Morgane Polanski. I didn't look if that's a Polanski.
It's for the best. Let's just keep going.
Okay. Alex Wilton Reagan, Karen Franz, Korloff, Nick Fletcher, Michael Benz, Caroline Stoltz, Twinnie Lee Moore, and Katharina Christie. I think, again, the ensemble, I wanted to mention their names because the ensemble is very good in supporting roles and small bit parts. And then you have those 4 main players, which is excellent.
Completely agree.
I don't have many notes for Story Inception and the production here, but just a quickie. As I said, the film was adapted from a novel by Meg Wolitzer. Frances McDormand was originally slated to play the role in 2015. In 2016, McDormand dropped dropped out and Close was secured. She went after Gary Oldman originally to play the role of Joe. That didn't work out.
Good Lord.
But Jonathan Pryce, I thought, knocked this one out of the park here.
So she just wanted to get the winner of our last Best Actress and Best Actor to be on the screen together for this one.
Right. Now, Gary had to choose, you know, Hunter Killer or that robot movie Tau instead of this. Sorry, Gary. You know, you've done a lot. You made a lot of good choices over the years.
I think he rebounded well.
Yeah, he did okay the last few years. I'm just saying. The film was shot in Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Abergale Estate in Dumfries. So I was surprised to see this. I'm guessing they did some exteriors, maybe in New England, maybe in Stockholm there. I don't know. It didn't mention
it's funny, too, because I was thinking while watching, you have a lot of overhead pan, like very Michael Mann-y overhead shots of the city without really establishing where you are. I mean, Michael Mann, you could always tell you're in L.A., you're in Chicago, you know. But this one was kind of, it was just really buildings in a cold winter. So it didn't really, I mean, the setting was what it was.
Could have been, probably, yeah. Jonathan Pryce made the ultimate dad joke during a promotional interview, Michael, when he called her Glenn Close-Up. Ultimate dad joke. I mean we like the guy.
We can retire.
Now we love the guy.
That's the pinnacle.
That's it. So, Mike, you have some specs.
Yeah, let's do some specs. Not a whole lot of information that's really available, so I'm probably going to be on the shorter side here as well. The Wife, written by Meg Wolitzer, based on the novel of the same name. Again, that debuted in 2003, so you wonder how long this was. I know you use gestating. That seems like a perfect word for how long this was in production, gestating to be made into a film 15 years later.
True. I mean, film people don't read good. They don't read fast.
Or at all, in our case. At all. Or my case. You do read. I
listen to people reading to me. I'm an audiobook guy.
Right,
all
right.
Just like I'm a podcast guy. So
I'm a magazine guy.
Jane Anderson.
I like the pages. Jane Anderson, the screenplay, directed by Bjorn Runge. I thought, sure, the story, like I said, was a derivative of a true life tale, but nothing I could find substantiate that. Completely imagined work of fiction on Meg Wolitzer's park, which again is astounding to me, and I'll have more to say about it. The film debuted at the 2017, we're just off the heels of the 2018 Toronto International Film Festival. This debuted last year, the 2017 Toronto International Film Festival, which happened on September 12th, 2017, and went wide stateside just last month on August 17th of 2018. It has a 100-minute runtime on an R rating produced by Anonymous Content, which is the same theater behind Below. Loved and renowned indie classics such as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Babel, Winter's Bone, and Best Picture winner Spotlight. So they know.
Look
how
at
to
that crack research.
How about that? Yeah, Wikipedia. As well as being produced by Metafilm, Tempo Productions, Silver Reel, and Spark Film and Television. It is distributed stateside by Sony Picture Classics with that really comforting blue screen with just the white type against it, which I really...
I like that, too.
It's like a callback.
Second movie in a row, First Reformed and The Wife, debuted last year. Film festivals come out this year around now, and we're reviewing them going into the following year's Oscar season. That's strange. It's not unique.
You're right. It's not, and it's not something that happens, you know, overly often, but I would love to just pick the... The scheduling really always fascinates me. What made you decide to hold on to this? Because you thought, I mean, if Glenn Close goes into the Best Actress competition last year, it's easily a four-headed monster. I think this is just as good as any of those three we gushed over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, at least for me. So, it would have been really fascinating. I'd love to know the reason behind it, but here we are. Budget was pretty paltry, $7.3 million, and has thus far accumulated just shy of $5 million for its domestic box office run. One of the movies, though, that gained a wider audience as time had passed after its domestic opening, as it expanded from four theaters its opening weekend to its high of 541 theaters last weekend. And in doing so, in the four or five weeks, it has gained over 75% of its audience on a week-to-week basis three separate times over the 5 weeks it's been out. So it's growing. They actually just scaled back the theaters. They hit the high of 540 last week. They scaled it back this week, so it's probably going to phase itself out. But it did catch an audience, even though it's not a lot.
It's going to have to get profitable on VOD, probably. This will be one of those movies where we continue to watch. It'll probably land on VOD in December, January area.
The re-push.
For that re-push, and then we'll see what happens.
Totally.
And we'll watch it another 17 times.
The scores probably will not leave you surprised. Relatively high ranking. 7.5 IMDb rating on 1,462 reviews at last count. Certified fresh Rotten Tomato critic score of 86% on 125 critic views, 107 of those being positive. The average critical score of 7.2 out of 10. But maybe surprisingly, those numbers dip a little bit, down to 85% and a 7.1 out of 10 average score when you go by the 26 top Rotten Tomato critics. So top critics had it kind of lower than the critics at large. Mm-hmm. 79% audience score with an average user grade of 3.9 out of 5 on just shy of 700 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Finishes with a 76 Metascore on 34 critical reviews, including one critic giving it a score of 100. That was Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian. 19 scores of an 80 or higher and only two scores below a 60, including the very low man on the totem pole, Diego Semarin, who gave it a 38.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. To me, this is a very satisfying genre to get into my teaser review here. Drama. Satisfying drama. And I think going into it, I expected strong performances. We got those strong performances. I expected a little bit of mystery, even though I didn't think the mystery was going to, you know, hold my attention for 2 hours.
I saw you write that, and I'm surprised that that was your take, actually. I didn't expect a mystery,
okay,
per se. I thought they would address it head on.
Yeah, regardless, the payoffs aren't dependent upon a mystery at all. They're so juicy and satisfying, and I'm hungry, and I think I enjoyed this movie because of these major players just acting off each other with all the subtext in the world to play off of.
There's no frills in this. I didn't expect many. I knew it was a low budget indie movie, and all the hype going into it was Glenn Close, Glenn Close, Glenn Close. So I was expecting a tour de force of a character, not a character study, but just an explosion, really, of this woman acting her face off, and it's pretty much what I got. I didn't expect Jonathan Pryce to be as involved. I don't know if that was my shortcoming or my stupidity.
He was a pleasant surprise.
He was great.
Well.
Yep. Yeah. Christian Slater equally as well. Max Irons had his moments. So I was not expecting the well-rounded picture that it was. It has its faults. It has its shortcomings. I'll get into them, but I was surprised as well. Pleasantly.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Plot premise here, Mike. A wife questions her life choices as she travels to Stockholm with her husband, where he is slated to receive the Nobel Prize for Literature. Like we said, I guess we'll get into some production values here, Michael. Much like our podcast, just make sure the equipment is on and let the talent be showcased. The production values are unnecessary to review here because pretty much just turn the camera on and let them
right.
go.
I mean, that sounds so simplistic, but that's exactly what it is. You get a couple tight shots, get a couple close-ups. There's not even really any camera tricks in this, are there? There's not really establishing shots, low angles. They're not playing with manipulation. They're just saying, here's Glenn Close.
Right.
Here's an argument that every household has probably had at some point, or a derivation thereof. And here's their son, who feels inadequate in the eyes of his father.
True. I think if we studied a little more, we'll see more style involved. Like we said, we'll watch.
Right. I'm not trying to say it's, yeah.
The two of us usually rewatch these movies a bunch. We're kind of coming off of one viewing here.
Yeah.
Because MoviePass won't allow us to go to more viewings.
Yeah, the idea of paying for movies really has got to be done. Something's got
to
be done.
And it's not going to AMC. Yeah, no, this is a problem. This is a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, the production value seems strong, though. Like you mentioned, the establishing shots, the shots of the city are nice. They got a lot of style to it. Love the locations. Whoever scouted these locations with the little pub there, that old-timey pub that was fascinating.
And that's where I would land, too. I'm more impressed with the production design than I am with probably any cinematography, but that's not to say the cinematography isn't a very professional level thing.
This is every writer's fantasy. They live by the ocean in New England or whatever that is.
Listen,
it's gorgeous.
There were so many takes in this that you were like, okay, we know this is a writer that wrote this movie, that wrote this script, and is getting cathartic with some aspects. But yes, this is a writer's fantasy in a lot of ways.
It's a fantasy. Oh my God. Can you imagine living there?
I was
there?
Thinking about you a couple times.
Can you imagine having all those fancy friends and all that hotel room, Mike? The hotel room. My God. Just, you know, if you win a Nobel Prize, it's worth it just to get in that hotel room.
I wish the whole movie took place in that hotel room, honestly.
Little Nordic opera singers wake you up with breakfast in bed. It's just the most gorgeous thing I ever seen. With candles.
Such an invasion of privacy.
And breakfast and
pastries.
Why
are you just walking in here? Nothing's on.
Yeah, look, if they bring pastries and they sing to me in those angelic voices.
Come into our bedroom when you and I are sleeping.
I am fine with all of that. And if you have a problem, you could be like Glenn Close and say, I have to freshen up. All right. Now, the close-ups of Joan Castleman, I thought they really work well. Obviously, it's filled with subtext. Obviously, she's thinking about things that you see pass through and pass over her face, and if not, your mind's going wild. I thought it was genius to have other things being said, other speeches being spoken, and her being the focus of it. It's just genius.
We talk a lot about facial expressions and what people do with their faces. You talked in just the last episode when we did First Reform for an OSP about Ethan Hawke's brow and how that gets furrowed and what
his
it looks
like. Dusted brow.
What Glenn Close is doing with her eyes and her facial expression, my jaw dropped a couple times in this performance.
Yes, Ethan Hawke, I should have thought of this last episode, but they probably took a thing full of plaster dust and just plastered his forehead with a light dusting, and that's why he looked like a marble statue in those
scenes. You ever seen the Simpsons episode where Homer creates the makeup shotgun? Okay. And he blasts Marge in the face with it. And Homer, you have it set on whore.
Wow.
I don't know why that came to my mind.
That's funny, though. That's good. That's good. Okay, Mike, you want to get into an Oscar lens? I think it's pretty clear what we're going to focus on here. I got some stats for you. You want them first or second?
You, me, and everyone else that's reviewed this movie is probably going to have a similar Oscar lens, I think. But go ahead. What do you have for me?
So there's no...
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Glenn Close.
Right.
Okay.
19 out of 20 have Glenn Close in their top fives on Gold Derby for Best Actress, including 7 number one rankings.
This is the first performance I've seen so far that it was I could see rivaling Toni Collette.
Yes. Award Circuit has Glenn Close as their number one for lead actress. So Award Circuit and Gold Derby have not agreed in the past much.
No.
Now they're agreeing. The Wife lands at number 50 on the Best Picture. So again, it doesn't have Best Picture numbers with the critic scores.
Tough year for adapted screenplay too.
Yep.
Yeah.
But this is a Glenn Close centric Oscar lens now. 9 out of 10 at Next Best Picture. Matt Neglia and our pals over there have Glenn Close in their top 10s for Best Actress. However, only 3 are top 5. So there's a lot of Next Best Picture buzz for a possible snubbing.
Ooh. Well, look, it depends on who you listen to and what you believe, right? Because if we go, like we keep saying, Scott Feinberg, who's the best in the business at this type of thing, doesn't have Toni Collette in his top 5.
Correct. And he had Glenn Close as his number one.
Right. So
Finish that. So performances, Mike, what do we think about Glenn Close in this film? Everything she does, I think, is loaded. Pretty awesome.
This
masterclass.
I said out loud, she is fucking amazing in the theater. During one of the scenes towards the end of the movie, I'm enraptured with this performance.
You said you saw this with movie. 17 middle-aged women.
Middle age is being kind.
Are you like?
It was me, my mother, and literally about 15, 17 middle-aged towards elderly women. Yes.
Well, that's great. And were they rowdy?
It was like the quietest theater I've ever been in. No, nobody was saying a word, which I think added to the performance, actually. But
every mannerism Glenn Close gives is just deliberate. It feels like just when she's getting the call. This is a clip on Anywhere You Look on YouTube right now for the film. It's one of the 3 that are out there for. And when she hears that the husband is getting the Nobel Prize, she just does this like slow blink.
Oh man.
And it's just so deliberate. I just think it's like such a masterclass in acting. You know, she's like, poop my pants, eyes wide open. He won the Nobel Prize.
We have to refrain from saying there's got to be a different set of words.
Listen, I call him like I see him there, Mike.
I only do what I know.
Each and every showdown, though, to me, that's the highlights. Like, she gets a chance to duke it out. Just with facial expressions.
This movie should have been
with each of the principal
characters.
This
movie should have been 3 scenes. It should have been the initial phone call, the discussion with Christian Slater that she has one on one, and then everything that happened in the hotel room.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess
those scenes are the key scenes,
right? And there's other. I mean, when they're actually giving the prize away, and with Jonathan Pryce's transgressions and other scenes, everything is very important. But she makes her money in these scenes, and everything you need to know about this character, I think, is pictured in those scenes.
Some of the most rewarding of the season,
good.
Really, for us. Several times, you know, the husband is fighting with the son, and it's fascinating to watch her reactions that are the same kind of reactions when the wannabe journalist, Christian Slater, is bugging them on the plane.
Yep.
I thought that was fascinating. You know, she kind of defers to her husband in many scenes early on in the film. That's kind of an arc whereby later in the film, it's more of she's kind of sick of it, which is interesting.
She feels like a woman on the edge throughout the majority of this whole movie. Mm-hmm. Like, she's so... Her mannerism and her facade has to be so calm and pleasant, but her eyes and her face throughout so many different... Even when she's trying to tell her husband that he has some schmutz on his lip when he's, you know, entertaining a crowd of people at the Nobel dinner, the drink hour, when mm-hmm. they're just... And she's, like, just giving him this death stare. The most important thing in the world to her at that moment is that he looks professional and stops looking like a doofus with food on his lips and keeps... It's just everything she does is so methodical and just serious.
Agreed. I'm also surprised, though, Jonathan Pryce is not getting more buzz as supporting actor. I thought
something I was going to bring up in spoilers. Yeah. Maybe it's the way his character's treated towards the end. That kind of, because it did kill it for me a little bit, but I'm with you. He was that performance again, the four leads. I mean, my focus is on Price, Close, and Slater, but you could throw Max Irons in there too. The four leads, the four main performances did an outstanding job in this movie.
Yes. And I would pile on there and say the ensemble with the photographer does a nice job, just the Nobel people. And of course, you know, Annie Stark, Glenn Close's daughter. I thought she does a really nice job.
I'm with you.
In the flashbacks. You're not high on Harry Lloyd. He didn't really bother me as much.
Just
but
came off so exacerbated and so over
really
the top.
I have a bias against his name.
I do. Hate his name. I want to be his agent. Let me handle you, Harry Lloyd. Not literally. That's gross. Let me just help your career just a little bit, he said from his mother's basement.
His last name could be something goofy, though. Like, his maybe that's his middle name, Harry Lloyd.
Like Cockschmear?
Peepeyton. Harry Lloyd Peepeyton. He can't. He's got to figure something else out. He couldn't figure it out fast enough.
Yes.
Wow. I'm a dork. And obviously, I've been working with kids recently.
Yeah,
my maturity level's just falling down. We're talking about a mature, you know, adult relationship, a marriage of 50 years.
We're chopping our feet here because there's a lot to get into with spoilers. Mm-hmm. At least the majority of our review is probably going to have to do because the big twist of this movie is... What the basis of the movie is.
Yes, yes, yes. So before we get there now, I got a few script thoughts, you know, where we can go non-spoilers.
Sure.
I was very worried about any movie, really, that depends on flashbacks. And I think some of the flashbacks aggravated me a tad. But on retrospect and the way they played out, I enjoyed the payoffs. So I would have to say that, again, I love the daughter's performance there. The flashbacks kind of worked for me, and that's a rare occurrence. Usually a movie with flashback, long-ass B story, I hate it. But this played well, I thought.
To me, it's all in how it's handled. I think the two ends of a timeline that meet in the middle somewhere can be done exceptionally well to tell a great story, or it can be fumbled easily. I think it is difficult to pull off. I agree with that aspect of what you're saying. I don't think it's something that's can be easily done or thrown into any movie. I think it depends on the younger versions of them and how they're going to pull it off too, because you have to convey, you know, if the majority of the movie is going to be shown on the relationship between the two adult actors and main actors, which is why they were hired, then the younger people, the younger versions of them have a lot up against themselves to really be carbon copies of those versions mm-hmm. of the character. And I think there's a lot of them to convey in such a short amount of time. I think Glenn Close's daughter did. I think Jonathan Price's younger version didn't.
In many ways, those flashback scenes empower so much subtext for the big showdowns in the film, in the hotel room.
They fill in a lot of blanks about it.
Yeah, and it's great because, you can see everything going across her face. I mean, it's like she gives us a recap of what just happened on her face in a nanosecond, going into an argument with her husband.
Can you imagine having Thanksgiving dinner and Glenn Close is just sitting silently on the side of the dinner, just with that stare in her eyes? Like, what is going on? Did somebody what happened?
I hope she's a beautiful person in real life because, if she's anything like these characters, you're right. No,
did
she's
I overcook
terrifying.
The turkey?
But there's a terrific scene where... It's going to be my best scene, I think. They're having a fight, the husband and wife, the Castlemans, and then they get a phone call. I won't tell you what it's about.
Oh, I love it.
And then
this
it's a
scene.
Huge emotional phone call, and it's just my favorite thing.
It's the authenticity, too, and it can't be done without the main actors being as good as they are. The authenticity, that's a marriage.
Right.
I mean, how many times have you heard, maybe not yours, because your parents are lovely people, and my parents are psychotic in certain ways, but I can tell you numerous times that my mother and father, who love each other very much, have been at, you know, butting heads, yelling at each other in the middle of a huge fight, and then something happens, and they attack it just as a team, as if nothing happened. Yeah. And it's just, to me, it was so relatable and so commonplace. I loved it. I thought it was one of my favorite scenes as well.
I guess, finally, I think the story does work. I think it telegraphs moments a little bit, and that's going to be some of my worst scenes later on. In terms of a film, it was a bit predictable. I think it's a little far-fetched at the end of the day.
The ending is very convenient.
I still don't care because I got what I wanted out of this movie, though.
Yeah, I loved the movie, but I loved it because of the performances.
Right.
That's where I'll land on it.
Goods delivered.
Right.
And we don't have to really go much further. But I would say performances over plot,
right,
kind of deal. So we're saying watch this movie.
Totally.
Even if you get it on VOD, if it's out of your theater, you know,
it's one of those things where the performance is so, it's Lincoln. Right. I mean, it's not, you know, on the level of Daniel Day-Lewis being Lincoln, but whatever that movie Lincoln was going to be about, you were watching it for
Daniel, right.
Because of Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right.
And this one you're watching for Glenn Close.
So let's dance.
Yeah, let's dance, man. Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
This is the spoiler section for The Wife. If you have not seen the movie, or if you do not want to hear what happens in the movie, again, you should see this movie, but if you have not yet, hit play, don't hit play, that would do nothing because you're already playing it if you're listening to this. So hit pause is what I meant. Go back, watch the movie.
Listen to another MMO episode.
Yeah, or
let us fill out your lunch hour or whatever.
Come back, hit play on us afterwards. Or if you do not care about seeing the movie first, if you already see it or you just want to hear our takes on the twists and turns, we're going to do all twists and turns from here on out, all spoilers. So this is the spoiler review section of The Wife's Oscar Sprint profile from Mike, and Oscar. Michael, let's do some carryovers from part one, or do you want to start with some more scenes?
Yeah, I wish there was more misdirection in this plot line, I think. That's just the mystery junkie in me.
So that's what I was going to bring up when you say that, though. You went into this expecting more of a mystery. So do you think that's just driven by your expectations?
Or driven by my expectations.
Okay, so it's not plot-driven, necessarily.
The plot, the way it plays out, is that we get the mystery at kind of the midpoint. We think we know what's happening, and then we know what's happening by early in the film, by the midpoint at the latest.
The opening scene, by that opening phone call where he's given the Nobel Prize, the way she stops jumping on the bed, the way she is when she first hears the news.
In the trailer, you and I.
Right.
Said what the
exactly.
big spoiler was
exactly.
when we analyzed
we went
the
in knowing it. So, yeah, but again, the big twist of this is, of course, that Glenn Close has been Jonathan Pryce's ghostwriter. Jonathan Pryce has been this long-established, long-celebrated author who has this wide collection of books, but it turns out that he was basically a figurehead for the talent of Glenn Close, who went into this relationship with him in their early college years because she was dissuaded from trying to make it on her own as a female author.
Now, my worst scene kind of really tips it off in such an obvious way. Elizabeth McGovern from Downton Abbey. Performances are great in the scene. Annie Stark does a wonderful job. She pulls the book off the shelf. She's at a reading. You know, Annie Stark, young Joan, idolizes her a bit. And she basically opens the book. It cracks. This is a book that's never been read. If you want to be read, you better stop writing.
Be a man.
Because you're a woman.
Yeah.
Be a man. Yeah. So it's like, it really spells it out for us. It's a little over the top, and I would say that scene. And I just, so very heavy-handed. Again, I'm a mystery junkie. Maybe my expectations were a little off there. It's not a terrible scene, and it pays off, you know, very well.
Yeah. I won't begrudge you for that. My worst scene, the young Jonathan Pryce, the Harry Lloyd character, the young Jonathan Pryce's character's portrayal, thought was a little much. I also hated the ending. I hated, at the end of this, so it's this big fight, like we've been leading up to for this whole movie. Glenn Close reveals that she's going to leave Jonathan Pryce. She's
it's
fed up.
Far-fetched.
And he has a heart attack and dies on the scene.
Now, they did foreshadow the fuck out of that. I agree with you. And I said this to myself. I hated that. And I'm in the theater. I hated it. But there's so many times where they foreshadow it with his pills, with his whatever.
Yeah, they did. But what
with his shaking on the dais before the rehearsal.
Doesn't it say more about her character if she were to be as angry as she was, as caring as she was on a dime, sees him suffering the heart attack, and as strong and resilient and protective as she was, if he were to make it through that heart attack and she still says what she says to Christian Slater on the plane ride home, if he's still alive and she's still committing to keeping his secret and keeping their family intact, and by intact, I don't mean staying with them. I'm saying specifically quite the opposite. If she is committing to keeping that family cohesion and the way they're viewed in society intact, while still being strong enough to go out on her own, want to split from the marriage, but keeping his secret because of the facade and how much it means to everyone related to her and around her, I think that says a lot more about her character than it does with her protecting his legacy now that she's passed like right. that. I mean, not that it's taken a shot at her at all.
The way they paid off the Jonathan Pryce relationship, the kind of the writing team that they in fact were. And I thought that was brilliant the way they paid that off, because in many ways he's gotten his rewards for doing what he's done. Being the homemaker, being the consummate homemaker, even though, you know, he screwed around and did wrong, but he was a consummate homemaker. He was also kind of her, you know, editor in many ways at times. I think earlier in her career, he was a stronger editor, and I think they kind of showed him as being kind of a, you know, his use declined throughout her career in a way, because she went right back at him when he criticized something and kind of so just, good.
But yeah,
but I agree with what you're saying. The way he supported her and supported their kids was strong, and it was loving, and they have this loving symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, it wasn't a marriage or convenience. No. There was feelings here, and you could tell that this was two people that genuinely did love each other, and that's why that scene where they're fighting, they get the news about their new grandchild being born, and they come right back and say how lucky they are. It's so heartwarming.
Well, that's why I think a lot of this plot line works. The ruse works. You want to understand the ruse, and that's the mystery of this film. You want to understand how they got to this point, not necessarily what they did, not necessarily what they did back in that final flashback where it unveils who done it. Right. It's about how they did it, and I thought that's fascinating.
Yeah, this is a movie about the interplay between those two, the husband and wife character. That's why it's named The Wife. About those characters more so than it is about any kind of plot. Is this trying to extrapolate the meaning of this movie against current times? Because I'm that lunatic, like I've said all along, about how movies should be viewed in the light of the day and year they're made.
Sure.
How does this go against the woman's empowerment? Is this a feministic movement? Is this a feministic role that she's playing? Or is this hurt any kind of woman empowerment statement that this movie might be trying to make?
You know, it's a reminder of a lousy day and time that it has always been. It's a lousy scenario that she's stuck in, this writer. Annie Stark plays young Joan Castleman.
Right.
So that's kind of a bummer. And it's a reminder of how the feminist movement has been kind of squashed for centuries.
Agreed.
Never mind, you know. So then in that way, it's a bummer.
But there is this whole agreement of her being the ghostwriter for him and using him and knowing and seeing the opportunity he presents, the whole thing was orchestrated by her. So you're right, it is totally a bummer, but she was the brains of this whole, not only the talent, but also the brains of this operation. He is quite literally a figurehead. Right. And that he plays gender roles are reversed at home because he's the homemaker.
He does indulge himself throughout that.
Sure.
Kind of makes her angry throughout that whole process. But there's just so much great drama to let this secret out and to show you how it's done. And I just love Christian Slater uncovering the mystery. I love Max Irons uncovering the mystery of his parents. And I love those scenes. They're just so
are we
electric.
Going into best scenes so I can gush? All right, listen, that Christian Slater conversation in the bar, her face, when he uncovers the mystery, right? So Christian Slater is the reporter. He wants to write a biography on Jonathan Pryce's character, but he knows the truth that Glenn Close has been the ghostwriter. He's collected the data. He's gone back and looked at all their early works through college.
He's got a conviction about it.
Right. He's pretty sure. He wants Jonathan Pryce's approval to write the biography of himself.
Ironically, yeah.
And Jonathan Pryce says, no way. So he kind of woos Glenn Close to just meet him for a drink at a bar when she needs to get away from Jonathan Pryce anyway, which coincidentally was right after the holy, the breakfast meeting of the choir coming in to adore Jonathan Pryce's talents breakfast.
Yeah.
So we're in the bar now. Christian Slater's bought Glenn Close a drink, says, listen, I think this is the case. I think you've been the Ghost Rider. Here's my hypothesis.
And the flirtations leading up to that are so genius, too.
Snake oil.
Yeah, I mean, such it's a like, snake oil. You think they're kind of flirty. Yeah. Maybe there's going to be an affair.
But it's a
maybe
chess game.
No, it's total a total
chess game. Because she knows. I mean, she sees. And as soon as he presents the argument, her face is chomping at the bit to get her gratification.
Yeah.
She could sink the whole operation right there, say, you're goddamn right, I'm the only one that's worth a damn in this marriage, as far as literary
well,
talent.
Well, I think it scares her that she wants to tell all so much in that scene.
You can tell she's close to the edge. Yeah.
With a little booze in her, with a little, you know, flirting.
Oh, man.
Behind all her over the first few minutes.
Yeah.
So she feels, like, vulnerable, even though she's stone cold in the face. But I think that scares her. That rattles her to the point where she goes back to the hotel room. The husband's pulling all his usual crap. And she's breaking down. It's genius.
So you took that as a sign of, I didn't realize how close I am to spilling it all. I'm too close to the edge. Well, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Look at how much she enjoys listening to the Nobel Prize introduction later in the film. It's just, it's so juicy.
See, I took that look in her eyes that she was giving Christian Slater to me. It was like, you motherfucker.
I agree with that as well. But there's a lot going on there, and it's just with her face.
And it is. That's totally it. I mean, the dialogue she's given, it's simplistic when she's not in the arguments with him. When she has to put on the veneer of just being a supportive wife and all that, it's very simplistic. And she is literally in the movie. How meta is this getting? Her character is playing the role of just being the wife.
Yeah. It's amazing, like, when the husband says, but good thing my wife is not a writer, and she looks down, you wonder. I mean, I love drama like this. Yeah. Because when he says something like that, you wonder if she told him to say something like that as like a kind of a cover story. You wonder if...
Well, we find out she didn't, because that's one of her biggest arguments is that, how dare you say that my wife doesn't write?
Yeah. And it's just loaded with possibilities. Whenever you have scenes that are just so loaded like that, it's great for a rewatch, and we're going to have to do that down the line here. Maybe we even... plus points down the road for this movie.
I'm higher on this than you are.
I think I'm higher on it just talking. I may raise my grade just talking about
it. Well, and it's amazing because it is, Jonathan Pryce doesn't get enough credit, but it is really just lifted up by this. Everything you've heard about Glenn Close's performance in this, I think, is true. It is phenomenal. And she's such a powder keg at different moments. There's the point where Jonathan Pryce's character is actually at the presentation. He has to give a speech.
Right.
She has pleaded with him at an earlier scene, do not thank me in your speech. For a couple reasons. One, she's at the edge, like you just pointed out.
Exactly, yeah.
Two, she doesn't want to be... She keeps telling everyone, she said this outright to Christian Slater, please don't paint me as the victim. I'm much more interesting than that. Right. She knows she's the victim in this story, but she doesn't want the
It's almost
the
like she doesn't want to play along as much. Just distract me from having to play
Yes,
along,
yes.
Right? I don't want to play this role much.
Let me be the objective viewer that sees someone winning a Nobel Prize and not the pity party of the reason that I can't speak up.
You go out there and play the part. You go out there and play the part like you've been all these years and move on. I would rather you just be the stuffy author. I would rather you just be this, you know, a caricature of the Nobel Prize winning author than me having to... act more, because that's not what my game.
And
I don't like it.
I'm at the end of my rope.
I don't like it. I just had to do it across from Christian Slater with some alcohol in me.
So
I don't want to do it anymore.
Jonathan Pryce goes directly opposes that request, puts the entire spotlight of his speech on her, and that's when we have that scene that you touched on in the beginning where she's smelling a fart and just looking so deadly serious and angry but trying to hold it on in. She gets up and leaves that dinner immediately after, and she turns and does the old trope where she turns quickly into a waiter and the waiter spills something on her.
Right.
How many times have we seen in other movies that's it? That's the straw that breaks the camel's back. Yeah. And that's what I was expecting here. I was expecting an outburst right there at the scene in front of all the other Nobel laureates, in front of everyone, and we didn't get it. She still has to play that reserved, calm, everything's fine, I'm okay, please let me go.
Well, it's fascinating because it's such like a fable. about, you know, telling the truth, about lying, about the, I mean, it's hits on so many truths that we don't often pinpoint and distinguish. I think that when you lie, we've all done it, when we lie,
what? You
know, we feel like we need to get away from those people we've lied to, right? I mean, it's like you feel dirty. You feel like, and it, you see it with kids all the time, just babysitting your little nieces and nephews.
Well, my niece is an angel, so I'll thank you.
Okay,
not
so
to
I
her.
Basically working with the kids I work with, you know, when they lie to you, that's when they kind of disengage,
look
right?
Down
and this is Glenn
away.
Close.
Yep.
She doesn't want to lie to people
anymore.
This is
a great point,
She doesn't want to lie to people anymore, and that's this is her running away from those lies and trying to get out of it. So that sets up that whole, you know, crazy sequence at the end where she's like, I got to get out of this marriage. It's finally become too much. You're making me go out there and lie to people to their faces. That's your job. That's your job to lie to their faces. It's not my job. It's my job to do the writing in the house and to live in a beautiful home. And I can be the mom, part-time mom, while you're the full-time dad in a way. And that's the deal we made. Now this is screwing up my deal.
Yeah. That's a fantastic point and a fantastic analogy. My overall best scene, just to touch on it, I know we're finishing up here. My overall best scene is the final fight.
Right.
Between the two of them. And the, I mean, well, there, it kind of comes in two waves. There's the pre-Nobel fight where the son, Max Irons character, comes through and has realized that basically his life's been a lie because Christian Slater revealed to him that this theory about how Glenn Close has been the ghostwriter.
Oh, the drama.
And he's been so needy of his father's approval.
What is the plot thickens, baby? That's like the plot thickens in
and
that
she
scene.
Lies to
it.
Her son to keep that covered in that moment because she knows she can't reveal it right before the Nobel
again
dinner.
She's cracking up, she's having to lie to her own son, which seeing his heartbreak, you know, seeing how he struggles to relate to his father.
Idolized his father for years because he's a writer himself. Can't get his father's approval. His father won't talk to him about one of his early drafts of a book. His mother says it's great, and his instant reaction is, what does that think? You know? And it's like, he's this kid, and he realizes it's all been a lie. So that's the setup, and then the delivery is after Glenn Close has finally snapped and says she wants out of the marriage and the ride home, and they just have this battle back at the hotel room.
Yeah.
And you realize that not only has she been living with the guilt of lying to everyone, the pressure of needing to be talent, but how much she literally is a martyr in that she reveals to Jonathan Pryce that she knew of his infidelities, how he always cheated on her, and instead of accusing him and lambasting him, she would take his reaction to cheating on her and turn it into characters in their books.
So in many ways, she's used Jonathan Pryce. Yeah. He's known this fact over the years that he makes that argument to her in many ways and in fancy ways. I love that sequence. And he's basically telling, you've used me as much as I've used you. You knew I was a liar and a cheat going into this. That was my, you know, weakness. And even though, and it's amazing, they still have love for each other throughout that.
Right. Right.
And that's the crazy thing. Like, even through all these lies, you know, that theme comes through, and it comes through, and you believe it. It's genuine. And yeah, it's just, it's wonderful.
Dude, when she's going through saying that and how she used him, it's like, look, I turned it into a character in this book. And she grabs one of his book that she read and throws it on the ground. My mouth was on the, like, I was literally, it was just an amazing scene. Amazing play by both of them. And then again, for me, it was ruined a little, tainted a little bit by Jonathan. That's when Jonathan Pryce suffers the heart attack.
Right.
So I take points away for that, but I'm in love with this movie.
And I think upon rewatch, the more we get into this, sink our teeth, there's the big moments that really hit. And then there's little moments too that I think we're going to sink our teeth into over these coming months. Like just the way she walks. She walks like a frumpy writer. And I just love that little touch.
Over,
Like she walks with that little, those shoulders forward, a little bit deliberate and slow, and I'm like, all right, that's a writer, that's someone who's in a chair often.
Do you think there was any meaning behind the EMTs coming in being a team of women?
Oh, trying to revive a hot woman too.
Okay.
Yes. All that's just added to it, and it works. Yeah, I mean, I think Runge did a nice job, and
great
of course,
debut.
Of course, American debut, that is.
Debut.
A lot of good drama here. I do think the critics are, they're in the ballpark. I wonder if the more we all watch this, the more we can appreciate this one. I wonder if this one grows on us.
I have no doubt that you're going to, even if you take just the Glenn Close scenes,
right,
if you go back and rewatch just the Glenn Close scenes, I imagine you're going to have new stuff to say every time.
Right.
It's that nuanced and that loaded with subtext.
Now, this is not quite the blow me away experience that Phantom Thread gave me last year, but this reminds me of, I don't know, it's not Lady Bird either, but it's going to be one of those that just builds and builds and builds in terms of our respect for it, like I keep saying.
As a movie, I agree. As a performance, I think it's better than either of those.
Here's the thing, though. I think we keep relishing all these callbacks to the plot, though, too.
You know, oh, well, it is.
We don't have a lot of bad things to say about the plot.
They're inextricably tied, without question. One is linked to the other because, well, the plot of the movie, The Wife, revolves around the actor and mannerisms of The Wife.
Of The Wife, yes. No, and that's why, yeah, plot and character, all those debates are silly. Somebody had gotten into a debate with me on Twitter a while back and was just like, well, the character is just a, you know, result of the plot. And well, it was silly.
I mean, that's
chicken
an argument
that
can be made for other, yeah, but I think when you have something that's literally just the movie, I mean, Jonathan Pryce is great in this,
right,
but he's the second lead, and he is definitely a supporting character.
True.
There is one character in this movie for all intents and purposes,
right,
and it's all about her life and the surroundings and the happenings of it. And that's why we don't see, by the way, we don't have any built-in sympathy or compassion for the Jonathan Pryce character. He's very one note throughout this.
Yet he still he does get it from us, I feel. You know?
You think so?
I do think so.
I mean, I feel like a lot of their love and a lot of their relationship is implied. Like, we're not showing him keeping up the house because
trying to give her so much credit there is his olive branch to her.
Desperation.
Anyway,
yeah,
he's desperately, he feels like he's losing her. And
probably
the fact,
feels like shit too.
Yeah, I mean, he's overcome with guilt and he's it overwhelms him.
Yeah.
And I think she knew it would overwhelm him and he's trying so hard to just connect with her in that moment and have that bow with one another. He's trying to share the adoration there. He's trying to share the reward.
That's a good point,
I think.
No, it's
perhaps
a good point.
Mayhaps.
But we also don't see, like, we see her sacrifices and the toll this has taken on her throughout her career.
Oh, right.
We don't get, as far as him being the housekeeper, we see one scene where he goes off to tend to a child that's crying. Right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't see a lot of the built-in sacrifice that his had to have made throughout this relationship.
Having had to sit down and write before it and knowing that it takes so many hours it takes, I think, you know, that's an everyday. I mean, that's that one scene is every day she needs her, you know, 4 hours at minimum, you know.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
But then again,
she's still picking up the clothes. So in terms of weighing the scales, yeah, I mean, she's put up with so much more than...
Well, no,
I
guess what I'm trying to say, I don't mean to belabor the point, but like we have much more sympathy for her because
correct,
we've seen it.
In the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm dying to see this movie again now after talking
here
about it.
I love this performance. If you were to put a gun to my head right now between this and Toni Collette and Hereditary.
Tough.
Very, very, very tough. And
it's so
I'm a
different,
huge.
Though.
Oh, I mean. Yes. I didn't see a demon
versus,
in this one.
Versus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put that in audio format for you.
Yeah, you got it. I'll cut that out. That'll be the beginning song, the intro song.
Oh, no.
What do you have for a grade?
I added a point. I think it's a B+87. I think there's something very special here. I came in saying, all right, B86, very satisfying, but I don't have a lot of negatives. Well, the performance is so good. Add the goddamn point, Michael. Also, Michael, let's do this.
This would have been an A for me if it wasn't for the ending, and I wasn't so bogged down by the Jonathan Pryce, by Harry Lloyd's performance.
Okay.
It wasn't terrible, but it took me out of the play. I'm a 90. I'm an A-.
Nice.
I'm higher. Rarely that I'm higher, but I love this movie. I love this performance.
We still have the 3-point curve. It's just a different way now.
Right. It's swung the other way. But I am enamored with this. I cannot wait to watch it again. I texted you as soon as I was out of this movie yesterday. I said, I love this. This
yes
is awesome.
You love it.
I think we're shaping up for a huge year for Best Actress, which I'm very excited about again. Second year in a row.
Well, let's get the campaign going and like you said, it's a race, we think, between these two.
For us anyway,
for
right
us
now, yeah.
You know, like you said,
next best picture is a little all over the place as far as those two go. Scott Feinberg, a little all over the place. I think for right now, this is our one and two.
Right.
And we'll see what happens as more movies come out.
A lot of Oscar movies coming out in October. A lot of major contenders for this category and others. Can You Ever Forgive Me? At the end of the month, we got an October preview coming out next.
Sure.
There's a little teaser for you. And stay tuned because we're going to kind of fill out this category as we go here.
I'm just going to add our social media. That was a great outro by you. We can reach out to us. Give us any comments that you have on this movie or any others or any other episodes that we've done. Mike and Oscar on Facebook. Mike and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine. Mike and Oscar at gmail.com on Reddit. Our website is actually like taking steps forward. We actually almost have a website now, which I'm pretty thrilled about.
We've been playing games with you online. We're going to have a home base for those games fairly soon. 6 Degrees of MMO is like one of those first games. You know, See by Skip we did a while back. It's been a game for us as well. So, you know, get us your 6 Degrees of MMO responses. Stay tuned. We got a lot of, you know, things in the fire about other interactive things we're gonna do, witches, and
trying to keep you
fun.
Guys involved, and just trying to give you guys a place where you can have some movie fun and kind of lead us. We do this for you guys. We want to keep this fun for you and give you a little break because reality does suck. So keep watching movies with us. And Michael, final words of wisdom here.
Yeah, Joey Tribbiani's not as dumb as he was in the as everybody thought. I mean, that's my.
Did you ever watch the spinoff, Joey?
No.
Boy, was that bad.
Was it?
Yeah.
I heard it was bad.
It was bad.
I might have watched the first episode.
I think I only saw the first episode myself.
I might have watched the first episode, which is sad because first episodes are never great.
Right.
And, you know, pilots are rarely great.
Sure.
And the MMO first episode wasn't great. Our own podcast here. Well, we had our moments. Like,
we had
our moments, but it was choppy. We tried, but.
If you're saying that we're the greatest podcast of the time now,
no.
That's correct.
Right. But, you know, going back, Friends episode 1, I don't even remember it, but I can't imagine it was great. But Joey Tribbiani, there's wisdom behind the goofiness.
Behind the poopster.
And Glenn Close, she stole from what he did.
We'll check you guys next time.
See ya.